What's up, and welcome into the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. Thanks for being back with me, your host, Arthur Arkish. I am actually checking in from Door County, Wisconsin, here on family vacation. I assume that the middle of July would be the right time to sneak away for a few days. And of course, as soon as we get situated here, the NFL seemingly goes haywire. David Gettleman, now former Panthers general manager, of course, let go on Monday. Kirk Cousins does not get a long-term deal, nor does Le'Veon Bell. I don't think there's any surprises there, but sort of the petulant statement put out by Bruce Allen in which he couldn't get Kirk Cousins' name right and then decided to just air all the laundry with contract specifics that I'm not sure were entirely accurate either. That all went down yesterday too. So I hope you checked out our podcast a number of weeks ago with Brian McNally of 106.7 The Fan. He did explain why a deal never made sense from the Kirk Cousins camp at this point. And it does seem that Washington has, well, say what you will, but it's hard to envision a scenario where he goes back there now. It feels like that bridge is burned. Maybe not. As far as the Gettleman news, I would just direct you to ProFootballWeekly.com. Hub Arkish has a really good way we hear it up there on not only what went down in Carolina, but what went down in Kansas City with John Dorsey's firing. These are two of the top talent evaluators in the NFL. So to see these decisions come down, maybe at this juncture, isn't surprising. Yes, a new scouting season has just started over, but they're pretty stunning decisions, no less, and we've got a lot more information on that. What else is going on in the league? Man, like I said, I'm on family vacation. I saw there's some Zeke Elliott news, some alleged Zeke Elliott news. We've got to be very careful there. The NFL investigation still ongoing, but he has been accused of punching a guy out in a bar. That was a TMZ report. There may also be an outstanding traffic ticket that I just read about this morning. So I think all we can safely say is that Zeke Elliott maybe needs to, frankly, make some smarter decisions. I'm not saying he hit anyone or he was responsible for this traffic ticket, but it does seem that he keeps ending up in less than ideal situations, obviously. And for that reason, I'm glad to have Brad Sham on today's podcast. Of course, the voice of the Cowboys. We also have Ryan Wood, Green Bay Press Gazette, Packers beat writer. Those will be our two interviews here that we'll get to in just a moment. I do just want to quickly point out that I spoke with Brad last week before these latest Zeke developments. Maybe they're non-stories, maybe they're stories we don't know yet. But it's important that you know the context of when this conversation took place and the way that I tried to ask Brad about how Zeke has been off the field, because we know he was frankly transcendent as a rookie on it. So that's what we got for you today, and I think I'll just go ahead and cue up Brad Sham for you first. Again, he is the voice of the Cowboys for going on 39 years. He's also a friend of the podcast, and we were thrilled to have him on. I hope you enjoyed the interview as much as I enjoyed having a chat with Brad. It is my great pleasure to now welcome Brad Sham into the program. He has been on before, and you guys know him regardless of whether you heard that podcast or not. He is entering year 39 as voice of the Cowboys, and you can follow him on Twitter, fittingly, at boys_vox. Brad, what's going on? We really appreciate you being back on the show.
Yeah, happy to be with you, Arthur. And, you know, it's just time to pack up for camp.
Yeah, we're getting there. It's kind of hard to believe. I hope you have found some time to kind of recharge the batteries before then. And I know there's always unbelievable intrigue with the Cowboys, but certainly coming off the season that they just had. So I'm just going to launch right in, and I'm going to start on defense, actually, Brad. Of the 11 starting defenders in the divisional round loss, four of them are gone. One of them will begin the season suspended. Rod Marinelli, master of resourcefulness last season, but he also had a little bit of continuity going on his side. How's he going to do it this year?
Well, he's going to try to do it like the Falcons did it last year, partly, with some new faces. I think the I hope the guys who left in free agency will not be offended, because I like them all. When I say that they lost some good players, I don't know how many great players they lost.
Right.
I think what they lost was a lot of experience, a lot of leadership, a lot of the things that enhanced that continuity that you're talking about. I thought Terrell McClain had a really good year for them, but you know, I don't know. Bears fans may not agree, but I kind of like Stephen Paia, and I'm not sure he can't do a little bit of what McClain did, along with some of the draft choices they have. Barry Church is a really good safety, and he was one of their captains. He's not to be confused with Ronnie Lott. He got a really nice deal from Jacksonville, and professional football players sometimes only get one chance to hit a contract like that.
Right.
So they lost like nine guys, and when you take nine good players off a 13-win team, it would be silly to say that they won't have any impact. What you have to do, because every team has about 25% turnover every single year, what you then have to do is infuse young talent, unless you're going to spend money like the Giants did last year, which few teams can do. Then you have to find young talent. They think they helped in the draft and maybe the return of a couple of injured guys, and so that's why the coaches get paid.
You know, Brad, I love that parallel you just drew to the Falcons. I believe they went to the Super Bowl with the biggest, with the most mileage from their rookie class on defense as any group in like 30 or 40 years. I hope I'm not screwing that stat up, but it was remarkable. And it hadn't dawned on me that you're absolutely right. They double dipped in the secondary with Jordan Lewis and Chidobe Awuzie. And I don't know if I pronounced that right, but they got Taco Charlton.
You came pretty close.
All right. They got Taco Charlton at the top, obviously, and they'll be looking to these guys instantly. Now, what we saw with Atlanta was that it took time to gel, of course, because they're so young and so much was put on their plate. But Atlanta had that world-class offense, and it looks like Dallas may be able to mimic that too. Is the plan kind of what they did last year, take pressure off that D, especially early, with that ground and pound, that powerful offensive approach?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the obvious formula going in. Now, they also lost two starters from the offensive line, and I think they're going to be able to replace them, but they have to show that they can replace them. Mm-hmm. But I would expect both Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott to be better players than they were a year ago. I think that their receiving core has a chance to be better. And then in the secondary, Jalen Smith is still a long shot until he plays, but they're optimistic, and he's extremely optimistic. Mm-hmm. That would be a boost. Charles Tapper was a guy who was supposed to help their pass rush as a rookie last year. He never even got on the field for a preseason game.
Right.
But he's had a really good off season, and so they think that will help. So there's two guys, and then they didn't just double dip in the secondary, Arthur. They also drafted Xavier Woods from Louisiana Tech.
Okay.
They got him in the sixth round, but they had a higher grade than that on him. And whether he starts right away, they see him as a pretty quick contributor. So if you have Taco and you have three guys in the secondary, and they have two real low picks, sixth, seventh round, in the defensive line as kind of nose tackles, and mm-hmm. Marinelli likes them both. One's a kid, Jordan Carroll, from Colorado, and the other one is a kid, Ivy, from Florida. And Marinelli really likes their approach, their motor, for one technique possible players especially. You're not looking for gaudy statistics. You're looking for effort and intelligence. And so I can't swear to you 2 weeks before camp that those guys won't make an impact. So the plan is for all of those people to make them better on defense, and for internal growth to make them better on offense, and then we'll see.
All right. Well, interesting stuff. We're talking with Brad Sham. He is, of course, the voice of the Cowboys, entering year 39 in that role. And make sure you're following him on Twitter @boys_vox. Brad, you said something that definitely piqued my curiosity there. You said that Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott will be better players in year two, or that is the expectation. Why does it seem, though, that everyone is assuming then that Dak Prescott is headed for kind of an imminent sophomore slide? Is it just because he exceeded expectations so wildly last year? And am I fair to ask that? Is that the tenor you picked up on it all?
I think it's a fair question, and I think the answer is largely the same reason that nobody expected anything of him last year.
Right.
And until he does it, then he's going to have to show that he can do it. And so he did it once, and you know, didn't win a playoff game, had really, really unusual numbers for a rookie player, and I am not into numbers so much as I am into effectiveness and winning the game and that kind of thing, especially in today's NFL where, in my opinion, the rules are so skewed that you can run up ridiculous passing numbers, and that's pretty and fun, but it doesn't necessarily translate to winning football games all by itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's one of the best leaders and most natural leaders that they've had in the time that I've been around him. His teammates have enormous respect for him because the whole situation is different. Remember, he was at this time last year, he was competing to be the third string quarterback, and it wasn't until camp was probably 2 weeks old that he was the backup quarterback, or at least the apparent backup quarterback. And it was 2 weeks after that that it looked like he was going to be the starting quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, his approach is what you want. His intelligence is what you want. His leadership is what you want. I think that the great trend in the NFL, for as long as I've been following it, is that players' greatest improvement is from year one to year two. Now there's more tape on him, and teams will be throwing defensive things at him that they may not have last year. And they'll test the offensive line with two new starters.
Right.
But
right.
I think he's prepared to. I think he's going to be a better player. Whether that means he has the same touchdown to interception ratio or the raw numbers or any of that, I have no idea. That
sure.
depends on a lot of things. But I think he's going to be a better football player because of the way he is and the way he studies and the way he approaches the game. And I think he understands that no one's going to believe it until they see it, just like last year.
Right, that makes sense. I'm going to try and tee this up very carefully, and I'm going to do it at the risk of saying that we're recording. There's a chance that we'll have our answer before this podcast interview tapes, but I feel like it's a decent segue.
Yeah.
So Dak Prescott seems to be. You just talked about the football character, what he's overcome, the expectations he has defied. Ezekiel Elliott on the football field, from a pure football standpoint, just an incredible success last year. Everyone knows, though, that this investigation is ongoing and that he, I think was once or twice called out maybe by Jerry Jones last year for stuff off the field. Does he have work to do proving himself as a trustworthy individual off the field as much as he showed he could do for that Cowboys team in between the white lines with Jerry Jones, Jason Garrett, guys like that? And again, I want
to very carefully teed up.
And I'm going to take a step. I want to take a step further, Brad. I just want to reiterate: Ezekiel Elliott has been charged with no crime, and this investigation is ongoing. He's been proven of doing nothing wrong at this point. But everyone knows kind of what the situation is, and I'm kind of curious to hear what you think.
Yeah. I think that the key word I heard in your question was trust.
Yes.
His teammates trust him, his owner and his coaches trust him completely.
Okay.
He wants to be a good teammate, and he wants to be the best possible football player he can be. The incident that the league's still investigating happened, as most people who follow the sport know, before he came here.
Right.
And I think it's a reasonable question, and it's also reasonable to say, what the hell are you waiting for? I mean, seriously, you haven't figured out everything you need to figure out about that incident by now?
Yes.
Now, look, we get that the NFL is treading especially lightly in areas of domestic violence, both because they should and because they've screwed up on it in the last 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So they have no, they don't have any room to make mistakes. And seriously, come on, you got to know what happened by now.
Right.
Now, if something does come down as a result of that, that's out of their control.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a professional football team, you have a backup, and they have a good one in Darren McFadden, and you just prepare to go forward. The extension of the question is also a fair one, in my opinion, because he hasn't done anything to be charged with some of his off-the-field behavior. I don't want to set myself up as his judge,
right?
Because I'm not comfortable judging anyone. My personal evaluation of some of his public behavior, if it were up to me, I might call him aside and say, remember who's watching, which is everyone.
Sure.
And just think about what you're doing. There's ways to have a good time and not be foolish. And that happens with a lot of guys around the league. And I think that his teammates and coaches and the organization are doing their best to give him the best guidance that they can, along with his family, which is very solid. And he does have, he's got all the right motivations. I think sometimes he gets a little excited,
mm-hmm.
but that's just me. But if you, the question you asked me was, do they trust him? And yeah, they trust him.
You know, Brad, for better or worse, I guess this Cowboys team is one that is used to having to withstand distractions, sort of off-the-field stuff, so maybe that works in their favor with this as it goes on.
It comes with the territory down here.
Right, right. And thank you for answering that question. I know it was a little bit of a loaded one, but I appreciate it.
That's also part of the territory.
Right. We're chatting with Brad Sham. He's the voice of the Cowboys, and we talked a little bit about the offensive line, replacing two new starters. Ronald Leary heads to Denver, and Doug Free, I believe, what retired sort of abruptly.
I don't know if it was abrupt,
but I think he caught the Cowboys off guard. I think that's fair to say.
I don't think he did. I think they kind of knew that he was leaning in that direction, and you know, I think he had 1 year left on his contract.
Okay.
I think they might have hoped that they could talk him into playing one more year,
sure.
But I don't think it's right to say he caught him off guard.
Okay, the potential fill-ins, Brad. I think Lyle Collins is penciled in at right tackle, and a lot of the buzz coming out of the Cowboys offseason was about Jonathan Cooper, none other than, I believe, the former 7th overall pick of the Cardinals. How ironic would it be if Cooper could stabilize that left guard post, and he turns out to have the highest draft pedigree of anyone on the most star-laden offensive line in the NFL?
That would be amusing. And was he 7th or 4th? He was really high up in the pecking order when the Cardinals picked him.
He has not been able
to stay healthy.
Right.
Sorry?
Right. No, I'm going to look into that as you sort of reply.
Okay, I mean, I know he was way up high.
Yep.
And, you know, they had him in last year for the last couple of weeks, the last week of the regular season in the playoffs, so they got a little buzz and what they could expect from him. I think the first thing that had to happen was for them to make sure they felt comfortable with Collins playing right tackle. I know for a fact that, of course, last year he was hurt, Collins.
Right.
But most of the time, his first 2 years, the coaching staff and the organization saw him as a professional guard, even though he was a very good tackle at LSU and would have been a very high first-round pick had he not been involved in an incident that really was not his fault at all. It was really circumstances, and he fell to them as a free agent. And so I know for a fact they looked at him as a guard when Free retired. They said, okay, here's what we've got. They drafted Chaz Green 3 years ago to be Free's replacement. They said that straight away. And the biggest problem Chaz Green has had has been health. The number one ability in professional football is availability.
Yep.
And so plan would have been for Green, who filled in for Tyron Smith a couple of games last year and did a good job. The plan would have been for Green to just step in Free retired. If Collins came back and improved at left guard and grabbed that job, then he'd have been the left guard. I think that they weren't convinced that they could rely on Chaz not to get hurt, or put another way, it would be bad business for them not to be prepared for something else. So during the first part of OTAs, Collins and Green both kind of took their turns at right tackle and left guard, both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And Green can still be in that mix. But Collins kind of, as much as you can not wearing pads, he kind of grabbed onto the right tackle job. They also signed a veteran offensive lineman,
Byron Bell.
Byron Bell, who
yep.
has played, who started a number of games, both
yep.
tackle and guard. So if Collins does, in fact, hold on to, as it appears he will, the right tackle job, then Cooper is the leader in the clubhouse at left guard. But Green will be in the mix, and Joe Looney, who was their swing guy, will be in the mix, and Bell will be in the mix, and anyone who jumps in there. They'll all be in the mix, and Cooper's the guy with, as you pointed out, the best pedigree.
Yeah.
And if he can stay healthy, then what if, it's happened before, it could be a long shot, but it's happened before in football that, you know, a guy was drafted real high, had a couple of three bad injury years, and then settled in.
Right.
And, yeah, that could happen. That would be a big plus for them.
Yep, it would be a remarkable story. We've got a few minutes left here with Brad Sham, and where should I go next? You mentioned the potential improvement of the wide receiver position. Now, they brought in Ryan Switzer. They re-signed Terrence Williams, but I have to believe that that improvement would start, of course, with a healthy Dez Bryant, who was on a tear to finish last season, I believe. Can you just give us a progress update on Dez and where he fits in? Not where he fits, we know where that is, but kind of the wide receiver dynamic heading into the year or into camp.
Yeah, you know, he's healthier than he was last year, and he didn't have a lot of work with Dak this time last year, offseason last year. Dak, as we've talked about before, competing with Jamel Showers, who's now a safety, to be the third-string quarterback. He's not getting a lot of reps with Dez.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever rapport he was able to form with Dez, and Dez missed some time last year during the regular season, but whatever rapport he was able to form with him was during the regular season. And that's difficult to do. So now everybody knows Dez is healthy. Dak's the quarterback. Now they go forward. They've had time to work together, and they're each other's biggest fan. I'll tell you, Dez Bryant, after the draft last year, and he showed me this text on his phone. He texted a friend, Dak a winner. He was very pro-Dak before Dak ever took a snap as the third-string quarterback. So they're each other's biggest fan. Now they've had time to work together. You know, now Dez has been in the league a few years, and his body's starting to bark at him from time to time, but he's still one of the premier receivers in the league, and he should have, much as I hate the word should, I think it's reasonable to expect him to have better football rapport with Prescott than he did last year. You know, Williams, they did re-sign, and I think he is a really solid number two receiver. Cole Beasley is probably, at this point, just about as good a slot receiver as there is in the league. And in Switzer, they see someone who can supplement and complement Beasley, as well as be a punt returner. But, you know, New England had some success with formations that include two little slots. So I don't think that's a staple, but I think it's something you can do. And I wouldn't go to sleep on a kid named Noah Brown, who they drafted, I think, in the fifth round from Ohio State. Now, Bryce Butler is the next guy in line, and he's a veteran, and he's made some nice plays for him. Noah Brown's got a little something to him, and I think he's going to give Butler a run for the if it's Bryant, Williams, Beasley, and Switzer. You know, sometimes you keep six. I think Butler and Brown would be vying for the fifth spot right now. They had a rookie free agent last year they liked a lot, Andy Jones, who spent the year on the practice squad. You know, sometimes those guys step forward in the second year. You'll see him a lot in preseason, I'll guarantee you that. And then they'll have some decisions to make. But I think with a healthy Bryant, the addition of Switzer, you know, I think they they can be better than they were last year at that position.
Okay, and Brad, I'll leave you with this. I want to get back to the defense. I want to get back to the pass rush specifically. I appreciate you were mentioning Charles Tapper. I'd sort of forgotten they've got sort of a red shirter, their fourth rounder.
Everybody has. No one here has seen him play football yet.
And that's always fascinating when you have that guy. It's almost like two mid-round picks when one comes from the previous year but redshirted due to injury. But let me ask, with where DeMarcus Lawrence's career has gone thus far, obviously you've got the suspension now for Irving. Not just his draft status, but has Taco Charlton kind of have the greatest onus to come out here and make it an immediate contribution, especially when we talk about all the moving parts behind them in the secondary, behind the pass rush?
You know, that's interesting. I don't think that I don't know that we'd have unanimity of agreement on the biggest immediate contribution.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if Lawrence is healthy, and he appears to be, he's probably the best left end they have he in their system, in Marinelli's system. I'm telling you, Arthur, he was against the run 2 years ago when their team was horrible. He was really, really stout. And Marinelli thinks that Tyrone Crawford is that same player.
Mm-hmm.
And Crawford, I think, Lawrence could wind up starting at right end and Crawford at left end, and then Crawford would be a guy who would move inside on passing downs.
Right.
But if you lined up on first down, my guess is you would look first at Lawrence and Crawford as the end. This is without Irving.
Right.
Who is versatile and will be very much in play all up and down the line. But without Irving, my guess is you would see the first snaps taken by Lawrence and Crawford at the ends. And Charlton, I think, will have his opportunity to work himself in. I don't want to make it sound for a second like it's not important to them for him to be a productive player. The difference in opinion will be on what productive means and how soon and all that kind of thing. You know, Benson Mayoa started the first game for them at left end last year, wound up after suffering some injuries, I think having six sacks and being a pretty productive player mostly at right end. So, you know, he's there and Tapper's there, and there's no great pass rusher. There's nobody that makes just, you know, there's no DeMarcus Ware or like that. But there's enough guys who can be productive, especially the way Marinelli uses his players, that I don't think Charlton has to be the starter from day one and get 12 sacks to be productive.
Sure. All right, yeah, that's that makes a ton of sense, too. And who knows, we didn't talk a ton about Malik Collins, and we don't have time because we're out of it, but I know he is a huge potential year two jump guy and can help the pass rush from the interior as well. Brad, I have taken all of our time for the day. I really do appreciate it. It was a great pleasure to have the voice of the Cowboys on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. And if you don't mind, I'd love to have you back on once the season gets rolling because we always really appreciate your insight.
You know, as a former writer for Pro Football Weekly, I am available to you whenever you like.
Thank you so much. Once again, that is Brad Schramm. I hope you enjoy these final few weeks, and we will talk to you very soon down the road.
I look forward to it. Thanks, pal.
All All righty. Once again, Brad Sham, the voice of the Cowboys, going on year 39. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at @boys_vox.
If you're looking for a website to keep you up to date on all the latest news, scoops, and rumors from around the NFL, look no further than ProFootballWeekly.com. It's the place for all the best news around the league. You'll find breaking news, hard-hitting columns, video, photos, podcasts, and more. All 32 teams, 24/7, 365 days a year. While you're at it, catch up with all things NFL in our newsletter. Our NFL Daily Update will send you all of the news you need to keep up with the pace of the NFL. You'll get news, analysis, and more sent right to your inbox at noon, Monday through Friday. Sign up now to start getting NFL news during the week. Pro Football Weekly, bringing the best coverage in the NFL to its readers since 1967. Are you following us on social media? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/ProFootballWeekly. Then head over to Twitter and follow PF Weekly and never miss an NFL update. There are plenty of ways for you to enjoy Pro Football Weekly, whether in print or online. If news breaks in the NFL, don't miss a thing and keep it at ProFootballWeekly.com. We now return to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Here's your host, Arthur Arkish, talking all things NFL.
Alrighty, so good stuff there from Brad, and you know, obviously we will all be waiting with bated breath to see what becomes of you know, not only Zeke Elliott, but certainly Dak Prescott as he looks to build on his awesome rookie year. The Cowboys look to kind of not only win another division title, but sort of try and coast through the regular season at least as they did last year. Up next, as promised, we've got Ryan Wood, an awesome interview talking Packers. Ryan, of course, from the Green Bay Press Gazette. But before we do that, you guys know I have to refamiliarize you with our awesome sponsor, Loot Crate. On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate has it. It's the best surprise you know is coming. Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. If you're more of a fanatical fashionista, then try Loot Wear. Monthly wearables and accessories with cult classics and your favorite franchises. If you want to get fancy, get a bigger box with even bigger loot with Loot Crate DX. Want to geek out your pet? Try Loot Pets. This offer expires July 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific, and let's make sure you know what the offer is. You go to lootcrate.com/Shaw, enter my code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. Now, let's also make sure you know what July's Loot Crate is. It's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Bob's Burgers, Futurama, and Rick and Morty. That's right, it is animation themed. So Loot Crate keeps bringing it. They've had Guardians of late, Investigation, lots of franchises that I love. And this month it'll certainly be Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that I'll be looking for, hoping that that will be the featured t-shirt in July's Loot Crate. So one more time, guys, be the envy of your friends and get your 100% exclusive crates at lootcrate.com/Shaw. Enter my code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription. Thank you again to Loot Crate, whose July theme is animation. I also forgot at the top of the show, guys, real quick, again, thank you to Loot Crate, and just one more reminder to you that if you're not subscribed to the Pro Football Weekly podcast, now is an awesome time to do so. Head to iTunes, click subscribe, leave us a rating and a review while you are there, and you'll end up just thrilled. There's a 98.75% guarantee that I am offering with you subscribing to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Not really, but I just like saying 98.75% guaranteed because I love Dr. Seuss, and I have a 2-year-old boy who reads that book with me constantly. Oh, the places you'll go. Where are the Packers going in 2017? There has been a lot of postseason heartbreak in recent years, but also some pretty dramatic moments, of course, and here to break down all of those is Ryan Wood. Up next on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, my pleasure to welcome in Ryan Wood, Packers beat writer at Green Bay Press Gazette. He's been on the podcast before, and we're thrilled to have him back again. What's going on, Ryan?
Hey, not too much. How you doing?
I'm doing well, and we appreciate you taking some time out of your vacation. I understand maybe we got to knock a little rust off. You've had a little time away from the Packers. Is that right?
Yeah, you know, I think when you're on the NFL beat, the time between mini camp and training camp, you try to really just get away a little bit, rest and relaxation, because once the end of July comes, it is 100 miles an hour to January, maybe February, depending on how the Packers do or how the team you covered do. So, it's been a good summer.
Very good. We appreciate having you on. And just in case you guys aren't following Ryan on Twitter, and you totally should be, the handle is @ryanwood, and that's where I found one of my favorite pieces of the offseason, Ryan. I'm going back a couple months, but really, really liked what you did with that in-depth series of Ted Thompson's draft history. I'm guessing that he read your piece, and that's the reason he traded out of round one for the first time since, 2008 this year?
Yeah, seriously, you write things and it just becomes the writing on the wall, and you look like a prophet looking back. No, it's the thing about Ted Thompson is when you go to the public portion of his job, what you see from NFL GMs around the league at the podium, he does as little of that as anyone in the league, maybe the least. So in order to cover him, and he's the decision maker behind personnel moves on the Green Bay Packers roster, really his reputation has been molded and built through the draft. What I like to do is I like to see what kind of production he's gotten from the draft. Those numbers are about the closest thing that we can get to really analyzing Ted Thompson, because his personality is so removed from the media. So it's always interesting when you dig up some of that draft production that he has accumulated over the years, and he is really kind of thought of as one of the preeminent drafting developers in the league. It's so rare. You look at an offseason that they had this spring where they actually signed free agents. They hadn't really done that in a decade. So it's very rare that you have an offseason like this. Usually it is draft and develop to an extreme. So it's always interesting to take a look at that.
Yeah, no doubt about it, and it's really in-depth, as I mentioned, so the best way for all our listeners to get all that great info is just to go check it out. It's four parts, and I will just go off the last thing you said. Actually, we'll go there in a couple minutes, but I do think it's telling that, like you said, he was so aggressive using other avenues this year, and it kind of speaks to some of the results that you found from your pieces. But let me start here, just kind of, half-joking, but after 3 years of kind of really just, terrible loss in the postseason, including obviously two in overtime, 2014 and 2015, is the way that they got kind of embarrassed in Atlanta in January, do you think that's going to be easier or harder for this team to move on from?
I think it has to be easier. Not that any loss is ever forgotten on the NFC title game or a conference championship game stage. Yep. It's not. They'll still remember it 10 years down the line. You don't forget those kind of losses when you're on the doorstep of the Super Bowl. But I was in the press box in Seattle in 2014 or January 2015, right, for the NFC title game, and the difference between the two is just no comparison. When you have when you really are on the cusp of going to the Super Bowl, you have it in the bag with 5 minutes to go, mm-hmm, and you collapse in a historic fashion like that, that's the type of loss that you just don't duplicate throughout your career. I mean, that when you look back, when it's all said and done, you hang up the helmet, you look back on a loss like that, and that is as bad as it got. So a blowout, while certainly not good, and there's no one that has warm feelings in that Packers locker room or the coaching staff or the front office from what happened in Atlanta, I think it's a lot easier to get over than when you have an epic historic collapse and you can see the finish line in sight. You can see the Super Bowl right in front of you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Chatting with Ryan Wood, check him out on Twitter @ByRyanWood, and especially because you could argue maybe the Packers were kind of playing with house money the way they got so hot after it looked like they weren't even going to extend that postseason streak at one point. But so let's go back to the Atlanta Dome in that game, and I think, obviously take your pick of what part of the defense failed. It was a collective failure, but I think we probably will agree that by last season's end, cornerback was the biggest issue. Do you think that Kevin King's arrival, Devon House's return, and let's just assume one of these year three candidates bounces back, whether it's Randall, Gunter, or Rollins, is the fix in? Do you think that corner group becomes, if not a strength, at least adequate for this club?
Well, if it isn't fixed, if it hasn't been corrected, then one thing you can't say is that they didn't lack for effort, because they threw in all kinds of resources, a first-round pick. They went out and they signed a free agent at the position. Again, this is not a team that signs free agents. They got someone in Devon House that they're very familiar with. They like him a lot. They drafted him in the fourth round in 2011 and had every intention on bringing him back until the Jacksonville Jaguars 2 years ago offered him 4 years and $24 million. They just weren't going to go that rich for a guy that had really been a backup to that point in his career. Devon House was not good in Jacksonville last year. There's a reason why the Jaguars released him. It doesn't happen by accident. With that said, he has intimate knowledge of the Packers scheme, Dom Capers, what he likes to do in the secondary, the press man coverage.
Right.
And he's someone who has showed in 2015, his first year in Jacksonville, that he could still have a lot of production. So I think they're going to be looking at Devon House to provide something that they lost last year with Sam Shields, and that's not necessarily a number one corner, but it's a leader in the room. They had too much. They were really, everywhere you looked last year in the cornerback room is nothing but inexperienced youth, and that hurt them last year. The veteran leadership of Devon House is going to be important, and then Kevin King, the first round pick. I think the hope is that he is a day one starter. When the Packers host Seattle September 10th to start the season, they want Kevin King to be a starting corner, and they eventually, sooner than later, want him to develop into that number one cover guy that they had in the Sam Shields. Now, that's a lot of pressure to put on anyone, including, and he's not a first-round pick because he was the first pick of the second round, but really a first-round pick in Kevin King. I mean, that's the expectation that he's going to have coming into Green Bay. It'll be very interesting to see how he develops and handles that pressure. Now, he was hurt a little bit by the NCAA quarter system, where a lot of Pac-12 schools, including Washington, where Kevin King went, if your school's on the quarter system, you cannot be with the team that drafted you until the semester runs out. So he missed everything up until minicamp, and so it's going to be even more of a learning curve because of that. But the expectation is going to be higher for him. It'll be very interesting to see how he transitions into early training camp.
Yeah, no doubt, and that's just a silly rule. I'm guessing you would agree. Hopefully the NFL will do something to change that sooner than later.
Rule, yeah.
Yeah, it makes no sense. But sticking with the corners for a second, reading a lot of Demaryius Randall love this year, and I just want to double down on what Ryan said, because the way that Ladarius Gunner was miscast by the end of last season really speaks to that inexperience, to kind of that you know, really unfair spot that a lot of these guys were put in. But Randall was coming up. Well, they were both coming off some rookie success. Gunter's a little more unexpected. But what about Randall and maybe his evolving role and how you see a bounce back potentially from him? It seems like he maybe has to regain the confidence a little bit.
Well, he's got the target on his back. Fan out there, every media member, every teammate, coach, personnel man, everyone will be looking at the number 23 jersey in training camp because like you said, Ladarius Gunter was thrust into that number one cover role by necessity late last year. Even Joe Witt Jr., the cornerbacks coach, said this is not a role that he should have been in. You just go back to the playoffs, Ladarius Gunter, each week of the playoffs, he had to go from Odell Beckham Jr. to Dez Bryant to Julio Jones, and this is a guy who was undrafted 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That's not in that the best corners can do with ease. So I thought he did as well as he could, but you want your first-round guy. You want the guy with the first-round pedigree to assume that role. Now, the thing with Demaryius Randall, that they've moved him inside. He's a slot guy. That's where they want to be looking at him. That's where they've spent the entire spring, OTAs, minicamp, and presumably training camp, looking at him. I think that better takes advantage of his background. He was a college safety for 2 years at Arizona State. That's what he played in college, in the Pac-12. He was drafted as a corner. He was moved to the perimeter and really showed tremendous ball skills and potential as a perimeter cornerback in his rookie season before digressing last year. But I think when you put him in the middle of the field, he's going to be more comfortable. He can use more of his lateral movements that he's more comfortable with. And I think that once you get him in the right spot, the dominoes behind him start to fall into place. On paper, this secondary, this cornerback depth chart, has guys that you feel good about where they're at on the field in terms of slot or perimeter. And now they just have to show that that is more than on paper. But certainly that's what happens when you add to the depth and you're able to get guys kind of course corrected into different spots.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it is interesting because as much as they struggled, as much as they were all thrust into kind of roles they weren't ready for, there's a ton of talent here, right? I mean, would it be a surprise if this actually became a strength? If Kevin King can kind of defy odds as a rookie corner and really start balling out right away, they could actually be pretty good here, I would think.
Well, let me just take you back to a year ago from right now, entering training camp in 2016. Absolutely nobody saw what happened to the Packers secondary happening. Now, a big reason for that, obviously, is Sam Shields' frankly career-ending concussion. It certainly seems like a career-ending concussion against Jacksonville in the opener. But even then, I don't think that to a man, the front office, the coaching staff looked at this as a doomsday scenario. I think that they saw after Sam Shields went down in the opener, a few tough weeks ahead as the young guys adjusted to new roles, but I think there was every expectation that they would. It just didn't turn out that way.
Sure.
So yes, they have two first round, and I keep calling Kevin King a first round. He was drafted 33rd overall, and for a guy in Ted Thompson who, since 2005 when he became the Packers GM, the only first round corner that he's drafted was Demaryius Randall 2 years ago. Kevin King is looked at as a first round pick, and this is as close to a first round corner as the Packers have had other than Demaryius Randall. So effectively, you've got two first-round corners on this depth chart. You have a veteran presence, Devon House. You have a guy in Ladarius Gunter who, in a lot of ways, can assume the old Devon House role. Back in 2014, this was a very strong cornerback group. It's one of the reasons why they finished 12-4, got a first-round bye, and went to the NFC title game. And a big part of that was that they had a guy in Devon House back then who could give them depth on the perimeter, so that when you had at that time Sam Shields and Tremont Williams, if one of them had an injury, like we saw with Sam Shields last year, if one of them was out for a series or two, Devon House could come in and really not give you any let off with his performance on the outside. I think that Darius Gunter is that same type of guy who, even if he is a backup, even if that's the role he enters the season with, it's a really high valued guy because he can step in for a series or two and not give you any, in theory, any letdown in the production on the outside. So that it's going to be a deeper group. It should be a deeper group. And the talent is just something that they're going to have to figure out once training camp opens. But there's every expectation, like a year ago. Remember, they let Casey Hayward walk in free agency a year ago to the San Diego Chargers, goes and leaves the NFL in interceptions last year.
Right.
It wasn't even a thought last year. It wasn't even a thought, oh, hey, maybe they should keep Casey Hayward, because they had that much resources. They had that much potential and developmental pieces at cornerback.
Yep. Great point from Ryan Wood of the Green Bay Press Gazette. We're going defense heavy at the top of this interview, and I think it makes sense why. That's where a lot of the questions reside. I've got one more for Ryan. All that being said, all the corner discussion out of the way, you know, I thought Ted Thompson showed some humility by going back with not only Kevin King, but then, you know, Josh Jones up high, and he spent a lot of picks there of late. Do you think there's a chance, though, that he may regret not doing more with the pass rush?
Yeah, you know, it's funny when we were looking at what they needed to get done in this draft before the draft. I know the feeling I had was it was going to be really hard to knock everything off the list in one draft. And certainly you saw him try to augment the draft this year with free agency. But even then, you didn't really see Ted Thompson bring in an edge rusher. So really all they added to that edge rushing group this year, they re-signed Nick Perry, which was their biggest move to kind of keep the pieces that they wanted to keep in place. And then Vince Beagle, a fourth round pick out of Wisconsin. Ted Thompson had the decision there late first round, whether you go out and get a TJ Watt, younger brother of JJ Watt, and he traded back. One pick later, the Pittsburgh Steelers drafted TJ Watt, and they went cornerback at the top of the second round instead of edge rusher. So that move will certainly be remembered if this edge rush group struggles this year.
Right.
That's probably the biggest question mark they have. Look, if Nick Perry and Clay Matthews stay healthy, there's every possibility, and they play all 16 games, there's every possibility that they're going to be enough as booking guys to give you a solid pass rush. But if you look at Clay Matthews and Nick Perry, their history will tell you that they're not going to stay healthy. Neither of them have played 16 games together in a single season. And that's behind them. You have Jerome Elliott, Tyler Fackrell, a lot of youth and inexperience. So it'll be something to watch, and they're going to need to have health there, and they're going to need to have young guys step up and get more production than they have in the past.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Obviously, Dayton Jones leaves, and Julius Peppers heads back to Carolina, so that's why we're talking about the pass rush here. What's the bigger sort of dice roll, that Clay Matthews actually stays healthy for the first time in a number of years, or that you do have, whether it's a FAC role or a Jay Elliott, someone that's poised to maybe kind of come out of nowhere and make some nice contributions for this unit?
I think the Packers really like Kyler Fackrell a lot. Now, he's unproven, and he's a guy that he's flashed pass rush potential, but he needed to get a whole lot stronger last year. He was a third-round pick out of Utah State, came to the NFL, was drafted at 25 years old, so he was an older prospect to begin with, and he even said this spring that he needed to get a whole lot stronger. He gained 10 to 12 pounds of muscle. And really last year in the run game got pushed around a lot, but there was that speed, that quick twitch around the edge that he did flash. If he is stronger, if he's able to better hold up in the running game, I think the Packers see him as a guy who can make a pretty big leap this year. And they're going to need him to, because, again, Clay Matthews and Nick Perry, their injury histories don't suggest that both of them will stay healthy and play all 16 games together. So they're going to need those younger guys who haven't been mostly special teams players, like Jerome Elliott, or Young, and just didn't get a lot of snaps last year, like Kyler Fackrell. They're going to need them to step up. But if I had to pick a breakout guy who was aligned to really surprise people, it would probably be Kyler Fackrell right now. He's going to get the opportunity, and they always talk about that transition, that improvement from year one to year two, your first full off season. He's a guy that fits that mold.
Interesting. Okay, that'll be something to monitor for sure. Ryan, I love what you said about how Ted Thompson was able to kind of augment the draft with some of his free agent signings. And to me, none of those, nothing fits the bill more than Jahri Evans after obviously TJ Lang gets away. And I want to get to the offensive line in a moment. But before I do, let's get right to the big fish. Who does Martellus Bennett help the most this year? Is it Aaron Rodgers? Is it that offensive line? Is it maybe Randall Cobb? How do you envision his role on the field, and how do you envision him fitting in Green Bay? I'm guessing you've had a couple chances to talk to him now.
Hey, you know, when you put the names that he helps, don't forget Lance Kendricks either, because he's a guy who historically, and they brought in Martellus Bennett and Lance Kendricks. Lance Kendricks has not been an inline traditional guy. He's like a big receiver, much in the Jared Cook mold. And Martellus Bennett, that's what he does. And Mike McCarthy at the owners' meeting said that he really wants to get away from using that tight end position the way it's been the past couple of years, which has really been displaced, and get back to that traditional inline tight end that Martellus Bennett does so effectively as not just a run blocker, not just a pass catcher, but even as a pass blocker. He's a guy that can stay in for extra protection, and he's a plus pass blocker. So he kind of does all three things that you want from an inline tight end. I think Lance Kendricks is aided tremendously. I think when they brought both of them in within a 24-hour period this spring, you just saw how well on paper that they could complement with each other. And I think the tandem of tight end is going to be, frankly, it has the chance to be the best tandem of tight end that the Packers have had going back to the days of Shimura and Bubba Franks and those guys, even late 90s. So we're going back two decades since they've had a Lance Kendricks and Martellus Bennett together at that position. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers is happy. they're going to be even better, I think, running the football, because you have a blocking tight end now in Martellus Bennett who really can maul and manhandle defensive ends and linebackers that line up across from him. It's really interesting when you see how this offense is really built. And you look at Jordy Nelson, who's probably better in the slot now that he is in the perimeter. You look at Randall Cobb, really still that secondary receiver in this offense. They're really built to go up the middle of the field. They have Devontae Adams outside, but other than that, there's not a lot of strengths on the outside of the field. Mike McCarthy for years now has said that he wants to, that he's, the thing he always says is the quickest way to the end zone is the middle of the field, and that's how he wants to attack offensively. They're set up personnel-wise to do that. When you look at tight end and then their bevy of slot receivers. It'll be very interesting to see just how much of a departure and a shift that is philosophically for this offense. But certainly the middle of the field should be open for business, and you have a quarterback in Aaron Rodgers who can take advantage of that.
And sticking with the interior of the offense, obviously there's been a sea change along the offensive line over the past 12, 13 months, whatever it is, with a pair of Pro Bowlers leaving. We mentioned Jari Evans, and if he can still get it done at this juncture of his career, what happens? Does Lane Taylor take a step? I mean, there seems like there's a lot of moving parts. With Corey Linsley coming off the surgery, you've got Evans coming in, and then Taylor coming back. I know they're really good on the outside, but is there concern, and is it warranted about those middle three and the depth behind them, frankly, Ryan?
Yeah, even Lane Taylor, Mike McCarthy mentioned earlier this spring, it was kind of in passing, but it caught my attention that he expects Lane Taylor to be a lot better this year. And Lane Taylor, replacing Josh Sitton, he was not a Pro Bowler, but for a left guard, he was easily solid enough. There was no major deficiencies there. And if you think about it, Lane Taylor is a guy who was thrust into that starting role basically the week before the season with no way that he could have predicted that the Packers would release Josh Sitton as part of their final cuts. So a full offseason to prepare as a starter should do him a world of good. Really, I think for the offensive line, they're set at tackle. They have one of the best tackle bookends in the league with David Bakhtiari, who was second-team All-Pro last year, and Brian Bulaga, who had probably the best season of his career last year, and maybe one of the top right tackles in the league. The questions are going to be on the interior. So long as Jari Evans at right guard, Lane Taylor at left guard, and Corey Linsley all stay healthy, this could be a very good offensive line. They had great health last year. They had terrible health in 2015, and they had great health in 2014. So that's kind of how the offensive line usually goes, hit and miss on whether or not you're going to be riddled with injuries. But if they can avoid the injury plague, the five that they have up front, I think, have a chance to be very good together. The issues, of course, is if the interior, whether it's center, whether it's one of the guard spots, if there's any major injuries there, I think you kind of throw it up in the air, because I don't know what they have for depth. Corey Linsley is the only listed center on the entire 90-man roster this offseason. I mean, just to give you an idea of how thin they really are up front, and Corey Linsley is a guy who missed half of last season, and the final month of 2015 was kind of in and out of the lineup with an ankle injury, and he had surgery this spring. So it's no guarantee that they're going to stay healthy. They've got to develop the interior of their defensive, their offensive line depth. They drafted Amicia out of Florida, Central Florida, in the sixth round. He's an athletic guy, but he was not a guy that was invited to the scouting combine, so obviously he's going to be raw and underdeveloped coming in. It'll be very interesting to see who emerges from there. Don Barclay is a name that Packers fans would like to see just go ahead and move on, but he's right now the backup center. So there's a lot of big question marks as far as depth on the interior offensive line, and that's one of the biggest places that they're going to really have to address early in training camp.
Right, and we spent so much time on it because, of course, the Packers let J.C. Treader get away, very talented, but just kind of had a hard time staying on the field. And Ryan mentioned the health situation there, kind of fortuitous the way Treader went down and Linsley was ready, so that kind of worked out well for them last year. Just on the way out, I've already taken too much of your time, Ryan. Thank you so much. A ton of great info here. We got to just talk about the backfield quickly, and maybe we can try and view it through a bit of a fantasy football lens for our listeners. How excited should they be about Ty Montgomery, or how leery should they be about Jamal Williams or any one of these trio of backs that are going to get chances, I'm sure?
Yeah, I know for me, I entered the offseason very leery of Ty Montgomery being a full-time starting running back because of the receiver background, because, frankly, he wasn't strong enough last year. But the more and more that – I did a story back in OTA time talking with his personal trainer and just how he attacked this offseason. And then the more and more I hear from coaches and scouts, they really sold me on the idea that Ty Montgomery could be awfully good in this offense. And a guy who, given what he's done this offseason in terms of really remaking his body muscularly as a running back instead of a receiver, training differently, lifting differently – I really think that he has a chance to be very good. He has that natural receiving ability that separates him from most running backs. He is still a receiver in the passing game out of the backfield, which presents a lot of tough matchups. So he's going to give you that kind of production. But the idea of him carrying the football 15 times a week, give or take, that was something that he just wasn't able to do last year. Never carried it more than 11 times in a game. Almost never reached double digits, especially the first several weeks that he was in the backfield. I think you're going to see that a lot more this fall. I think that that's going to become more common for him to get into the 15, 16, 17 carry range. His season high last year carried the football 16 in Chicago. He had 162 yards and 2 touchdowns. The one time he was given a major workload, he did a lot with it. I think you're going to see more of that, and obviously the receiving part of his game as well. I think there's a chance, certainly, that he could be very good in the backfield. It'll be interesting to watch as training camp begins.
Terrific stuff from Ryan Wood. Again, I'd love to keep him all day, but we've already taken too much of his vacation time. Ryan, can we get you back on the podcast once the season kicks off, and you can share some more of your knowledge with us then?
Absolutely. Call me anytime.
All right. That is Ryan Wood. Check him out on Twitter at @ByRyanWood and, of course, in the Green Bay Press Gazette. And we thank him again for being so generous with his time today. All right, thank you once again to Ryan Wood, talking Packers, and of course Brad Sham talking Cowboys. I'm not sure if these two teams are on another postseason collision course, and frankly, I wasn't sure I was going to end up pairing their interviews together. I spoke with Ryan last week as well, make sure I mention that, and if I knew they were going to be in the same show, maybe I would have asked a few more specific questions about that scintillating playoff Packers win, excuse me, I should say, that Cowboys frenzied comeback that came up a little short. But hey, we're reviewing off seasons, and these teams are both trying to move forward and start anew. So anyway, that's going to do it for today's Pro Football Weekly podcast. One more big thank you to both Brad and Ryan. Of course, another thank you to Loot Crate. One more reminder, head to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast. And after that, that's when you definitely deserve the biggest thanks for being back with me this week. We're closing in, guys. Only, another 10 days or so, even less, before camps open. And we've got several podcasts to roll out still. So keep an eye out at iTunes, at the ProFootballWeekly.com website this week. There will be another show in the coming days. So I hope everyone is doing well and enjoying what we've had recently on the website. I mentioned the Way We Hear It piece from Hub. Greg Gabriel has a fun column, too, I believe went up Monday on kind of what coaches and GMs are doing this time of year as action gets ready to kick off again. So enjoy all of that, and I will be back with you guys very soon, checking in once more from Door County, Wisconsin. Until then, I hope you have a great day.